raspberry pretzel pie. It's a whipped cheesecake filling, pretzel crumb crust, raspberry pie filling I make on top. So it's tangy, salty, sweet.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for supporting the Pohata Podcast. This is a show where we talk about jiu-jitsu with jiu-jitsu people, very often black belts. This time around, though, fresh off his recent win in the LFA, I'm talking with Santos Verdenez again. Thankfully, with the help from Ben Newman and Caitlin Young, who along with Brock Larson were the coaches that helped him put that win together, we sat down at the Striking Institute and ate some amazing pie via Ben the Baker. Check him out on Instagram for sure. Before we jump into this episode, it's brought to you, as usual, by Way of the Tiger Soap Company, a small, local business created by one of us. You may not be good at jiu-jitsu, but you can smell good at jiu-jitsu. I just picked up a new one, what I call the Purple Bar. It's called Smoke and Shadow. Also, per usual, shout out to Hamel Jiu-Jitsu in Hamel, Minnesota, without whom I'd have to sleep in on Friday mornings. And without further ado, my conversation with Santos, with Ben the Baker, and with the striking Viking, Caitlin Young. What's the deal with the pies? You're the pie guy.
I brought a raspberry pretzel pie today. It's one of my
You brought
best.
A what?
Raspberry pretzel pie. It's a whipped cheesecake filling, pretzel crumb crust, raspberry pie filling I make on top. So it's tangy, salty, sweet.
It's how I like my men. Also, it doesn't sound like I can afford it. Raspberry pretzel
judging
pie.
By your car, I saw outside. It's, I don't know. Is that your car?
Judging by my car, I can afford it because I don't have a ridiculous car payment. How about that?
Yeah, right. My car had no bumper for the last 7 years, so it's kind of a joke if you know what I drive.
It's all right. Mine doesn't have a bottom dash anymore.
Your poor car's been through the ringer.
Yeah, it Wendell's been banged out. And now it doesn't have a bottom dash.
Screwdriver starts your car.
Yep, right? Screwdriver starts my car.
What do you need a bottom dash for?
Not a bottom dash, but like the cover under the steering wheel.
Regardless of what it's called, what do you need it for?
You know that's true. That's true. I really.
Who are you trying to
like
impress?
Cars are for go and come back.
Yeah.
That's it.
The come and go.
Yeah.
That's what I call mine.
A little bit of both, for sure. Yeah. So from previous ramblings, not everybody has watched UFC 300?
I did not
get a chance, no. It was a stupid girlfriend's birthday party.
We were going to hang out with Santos.
You're being recorded, sir.
Girlfriend responsibilities.
Being recorded, oh. Sir.
Sister's birthday party, not her birthday party. If it makes it any better.
I was hoping to get some hot coaching takes from some of the fights, but... Of course, I didn't make it to the last two fights. I made it through Holloway's finish.
Okay.
And I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. This is like 10:45 at night. I can't do this. I barely made it through that fight.
When you're energized after seeing that finish?
No, I was ready for bed from about 8:30 p.m.
I can't sleep for an hour. No, it's
ridiculous.
Much energy. I gotta knock someone out. Never tried it. Sounds fun.
That's not true.
So let's talk about fights that we all saw. What do you think?
Let's see. Only saw the Holloway fight.
I mean yours, bro.
Oh, that one.
If none of you have watched 300, fuck it. Let's jump in. Talk about your last fight.
Last fight was good. I went in kind of expecting to know that this guy was pretty competent on the ground, a little more wild on the feet. So just kind of going in, and then right away, like after the first cross that I threw, like just started grappling right away, and just pretty much every time I went for a takedown, for majority of the time, just reversed it or took him down and ground and pounded for a while. Third round was a little bit different, and we stood up on the feet towards the end a lot more, and then he had my back for a little bit, and then. And then the first round, jumping around a little bit, and then the first round, I had him in this, had an arm choke that I swear, like, so I watched it back again, and it was like there was this weird moment where the referee separated us, and there was a bunch of confusion because time wasn't up yet, so no one really knew what was going on. And when I rewatched that, the camera guy was, like, facing directly down looking at my opponent, and I watched that, and, like, when I got off of him, his arm was like still up and like his eyes were he played it off well. And then you see him like blink and come back, and then the bell rings, He gets up, he walks to the middle of the cage and like looks around like he doesn't know what's going on, and then walks back to his corner. I'm like, oh my God, that could have been the first round right there.
To be fair, you do that most rounds though.
Yeah.
You look around pretty lost.
You know, yeah. Just having a good time.
So he was out or close to out is what we're saying?
I'm pretty sure.
The bell rang, but it wasn't
good timing.
Obvious.
No.
The cage kind of got in your way on that, right?
Yeah.
If I recall
correctly,
because you hopped to the side and it was in the cage.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Did something like that happen at UFC 300, too, with the two Chinese women that fought later on?
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's out there and available, but, like, there was roughly the same sort of thing where somebody was asleep. And the bell rang.
And they let her get up.
And they
kind of
shook it off. And
yeah.
So, I mean, that's roughly the highest level. So, okay.
Well,
it happens at all levels.
The best example was, similar-ish, or Matt Hughes versus what's-his-face. Lifts him up.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in triangle choke.
Oh, yeah.
Lifts him up on top of the cage, passes out, slams on the ground as he passes out. But that knocks out the other guy. Who was the other guy?
I forget.
Knocks him out. But Matt Hughes wakes up first. So he wins. And I'm like, that's actually the best, most fair way. Because in a real fight, the guy's dead.
It's like the short sprints. It's who leans the best.
What was this? He was super.
Yes. I want to say Carl, but something. But that's not it. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah, I can picture him. But
some brain damage in the room. Nobody's going to
remember. Yeah, maybe a little CT.
More than our fair share of brain damage.
Yeah.
Coach has got a better breakdown than that, you think? Should they interrupt you and tell the truth or what?
I think so.
I got a little insider spy. He rings the bell and runs a little time. He said you handled it pretty handedly.
Oh, yeah. My man, Paulie.
Yeah, yeah.
God, that guy, dude, he parties like a 20-year-old. Like, that guy, he knows.
Multiple days a week. It's a profession, though. It's for work.
Oh, yeah.
He's not having fun.
Yeah.
That's just how he has to live.
Drinker at this point.
Yeah. So maybe I don't trust his appraisal of your fight.
And then let's see what else. Any other highlight moments? That was pretty much it. Had some pretty good combos in the last round. But every time there was like any kind of engagement on the feet, it immediately shoot for a takedown. There was one really good one that he had. He ended up going, he stepped forward with his foot and locked my leg.
Yeah, he outside tripped, right?
Yeah, he outside tripped. There we go.
I like your version of
it better. You know, it gives you a better visual, really.
I'm trying to think right now. Words are coming to my brain.
So was it game plan to stay on the feet with him as much as possible?
I wouldn't really say there was much of a game plan, to be honest. There's like a general rule or some generals, and then we just kind of see how it plays out from there.
We knew he was going to flop to his back for him.
Yeah.
Because you know how when you roll with some people, they're more willing to give up like... They're willing to give up dominant position, and they might still be going for subs, but they're willing to give up small exchanges.
Yeah.
And when you watch that guy on tape, he's competent on the feet and the ground, but he's willing to give up if there's pressure. So we figured he'd end up on top of him if it went on the ground consistently. And
like the opposite of a wrestler scramble.
100%. Yeah.
You know, like when you see two dogs, you had a good thing. You see two dogs playing, and then one dog's dominant. It's like, no, you're going to go down. And then the other dog flops over, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah,
and
I mean.
Shows his belly to him.
Is that a good thing in a fight, though? I mean, if you know
for
your weaknesses.
Santos,
yes. Yeah, that was good for me.
Depends on which dog.
Like, if I know I've got, like, some glaring weaknesses, okay, I'm going to concede not-so-great positions because I'm better there. But, like, really? Is that still the best game plan?
Well, I think that can happen to people sometimes when they're... I think it can happen a lot if you train your martial arts separately a lot, because jiu-jitsu, if we're just doing jiu-jitsu and you're a good guard player, it's a great move. If we're doing jiu-jitsu with strikes, now what's a good idea can change. And Santos in particular hits incredibly hard on the ground. Like, you watch some of his fights, guys will take two or three in turn. In a way
like
that they won't
take
other
my
fights.
Back. I can't deal
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, 100%. So for him in particular, it was a good matchup where another guy maybe wouldn't have been.
That's kind of a scary sentence. Santos hits hard enough that people just turn around and give up the back.
Wait, why did you turn around and give up your back to him then?
Well, you know, that is a good question, and I'm working on that one, actually. I don't have an answer for you yet, but...
Paulie did say something like he was on your back for quite a bit of time. Is that
yeah?
Is that
like, I would say it was like a minute 30 or so. Yeah. It wasn't incredibly long, but long enough to for him to have an opportunity to go for something or submit me. So yeah.
Did he get? I mean, was he approaching anything, or was
he
just
tiring? He wasn't close on anything.
He wasn't really close to anything. He was like trying to. He was mainly just trying to like hit me from like while he was had my back. He didn't really hit hard, and on top of that, like a lot of stuff, I was just kind of like, you know,
deflected
or you know, whatever. It wasn't really landing clean. So.
Well, if he's gonna be a better grappler, probably wants to take it to the ground. Why isn't he finishing you with a choke or something?
I don't know, man. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's how I do jiu-jitsu, but I'm trash. You know, get on top, stay on top, because I don't. I suck at these submissions, so I'm just gonna stay on top. But I'm not in a fight either.
Yeah.
With those gloves on, man, unless you're Damian Maya, it's so,
you know, it's,
it seems
is
so hard to get.
Actually.
I don't know how Damian Maya does it, but like a lot of people are not doing it unless someone gives up.
It's super easy to like trap their hands.
It's very hard to get rid of the chokes. Back. You know how you're peeling, you're trying to get underneath the jaw. Now imagine your hand is twice as fat. I mean, you
and you got this thing your hand sinks into too. Yeah, like the glove of your hand just sinks in and you grab onto.
So easier to trap my hands and harder for me to slide into spots that I would normally slide into. Huh?
Grips are gonna change too because the gloves are so poofy. I notice I'm not able to like gable grip as well because of the wrist area, and so I usually end up just having to go S grip.
Slide the fingers in there.
Yeah,
like, you can grab your own. Yeah.
It's only cheating if they catch you.
You can grab your own.
You can grab your own fabric.
Gloves.
Yeah.
Just oh not, well, like, what the fuck? Slide your fingers in there. What are we even talking about? It's not cheating if it's not cheating.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never. I guess it's just never came to mind. I think I trust my fingers more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Like for some reason, like
the guy would have been crazy skinny for a body lock.
Yeah. Plus all the gaw too kind of gets in the way there.
Rip your finger off or something crazy.
I don't know. That would be pretty sick, right? Like you're so strong, you can rip off your own fingers.
Sick's the right word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's training?
I relish these moments.
After pause, we stare at him as he drinks his Coke.
But yeah, so we'll see what's coming next. I'm gonna be on the September 20th one.
Ignite again?
No, that'll be LFA again.
And this is how I find out. This is how I find out.
This is how you find out.
Oh my gosh!
Sorry, you are not the father. So Jeremy, my manager, said he has something big planned. So hopefully, I'm hoping it's a title shot or main event next time.
First intergender fight.
First intergender fight.
Or interweight class, and he's 220 pounds.
Yeah.
That's something big.
Gabby Garcia walks out. Do you accept?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
How much am I getting paid?
I've seen her striking. You'll be fine.
Oh, Gabby.
You leverage the virality of the video of that, and you make money off of that. That's what you do. Always take the crazy fight. Crazy fights make more money than real fights. That's why Tyson is fighting YouTubers.
Shift it to New
Year's
Eve. Tell Jeremy to shift the card to New Year's Eve. We'll get our own New Year's Eve card going.
We can wear
that Japan.
Walk out attire.
I like this. We're planning the future of local fighting.
Ed Soares, are you
circus?
Listening?
I forget last time I chatted with you. How long do we train for one of these fights?
What was it? We had, I don't know, they all blended together because I had like four fights in a row.
This one was right after.
Pretty much right after the last one. So
is that good or bad?
It's great. That's awesome. Yeah, it's good for weight cutting. It's good for just trying to pump out as many fights as you can. Because that's what I'm trying to do right now. I'm trying to get as many in before the end of the year. And hopefully, you know, knocking on the UFC's door, maybe get an opportunity by the end of the year. So, yeah.
Did you happen to listen to Castaneda on here, the episode with John?
I didn't. Was that the same one as you had with John Nelson?
No. That was later on. But
you just opened the gym with Friggin.
John and Josh.
In Plymouth, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The description of him chasing fights so that he could be, concerned with the UFC knocking on the door is fucking wild. Like, he's basically, because you got, you know, you can only fight so close together within certain states and all this, so he just went around the country.
Bouncing around.
And worked his way around the suspension or sanction or whatever they call it.
Oh, yeah.
So good for you. Doing them as often as possible. How many fights in the last year, then?
In the last year, I think I've fought all six within the last year, right, of my professional ones. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That makes cutting easier, having them closer together?
Well, I mean...
Well, your fat isn't ballooning.
Yeah. So, like, pretty much in the middle, or, like, in the beginning, was doing good, and then somewhere along the middle, like, I was struggling a little bit. I didn't quite really, like, understand food and, like, my... Like, well, you know, like, because...
If you eat too much of it, it's worse.
You know,
eat less of it,
portion control, and what you're eating, right? Like, you can't just, like, because I would try to, like do keto, which was not great, right? Because you need carbs while you're training.
Now you'll train like a turd. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't really, like, so I was just, like, you know, just doing, like, these stupid, like, diets that I thought would, like, you know, help, but weren't, like, actually good. And
it's a good thing you have coaches around you, bro.
Well,
because you are a bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's some bro brain shit right there.
Dude, I wonder
if keto is the way to do it.
It was like the most lazy, like, research I'd ever done. I was like, oh, like, you know, like, keto is supposed to help you burn fat, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it was just like Pinterest type knowledge, little points,
yeah.
Like 5 points. Right. Like, okay, I think that works. So let's
just
do
have
that.
It on your mirror.
Yeah.
When you get up in the morning.
Do keto plus carbs and you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Plenty of protein, plenty of fat, and plenty of carbs.
Yep. And so basically just, the main thing was also, like, how I thought about food. Like, every time after a fight, I would have this, you know, like, you go and drink. Everything. It's like, now I have to drink as much as possible, but do that, but with food. that was me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like that too.
You know, I wasn't gonna say it, but
yeah, I just want 300 pounds. But, how's that work out in terms of durability? Like, if you're staying close to your body, your fight weight, shall we say, across a year, year and a half, six separate fights, six separate fight camps, as we call them.
I don't know.
You're not, like, emaciated. You're not at such a low body fat level, I think, that it's detrimental to you. I think some people have to be so low body fat to make weight that they could not maintain that for a year round. It would be pretty bad. But I think, I don't know, I think with your composition, it's...
Yeah.
Like, you're still cutting some. It's just not an extreme cut. And it's... Ben started working with him on the food end of things a little bit more. It's like... There's just less of a feast or famine thing going on. I think that's a really easy thing to start happening when you're fighting too, is like, you're so restricted. So then you want to let loose even more, and then you have to be more restricted, and it kind of almost turns into like a disordered eating type of situation.
Yeah, all fighters are.
Yeah. Have eating disorders. I mean, it's super common. Yeah. I think that's why
all fighters
often blow up when they retire, because they're just like, I can have it all now. You know, it's super easy to fall into that. So I think it's just more, you've been doing, like, a really good job of staying more middle of the road.
I have the best job ever. I just watch his weight graph.
And then he called me a fat ass.
I just body shamed.
I just sent him text, hey, fatty. Why are you 2 pounds up from where you're supposed to be?
Chubby wubby, better get that down.
So fun. I love it.
Are those your thighs I hear slapping together? We're across town. So yeah.
Why don't you come up with clever stuff like that? Then I'd be...
You can hit me in the DMs if you want some good fat shaming lines, because I got it. We're good to go. What are you doing differently nutrition-wise, legitimately, other than just making fun of them?
Oh, no, I basically just make fun of them. I think tracking was a big thing. I think some people do this, if they know they're not doing too well, they just kind of stop looking at the scale, which 100%. You did that once or twice, and that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
You're just like, maybe it'll feels solve
right
itself.
In the
I
moment.
Can't look at
yeah.
it anymore.
Yeah.
And then crash hard, but
yeah.
But so I just have him weigh himself in every single day, and then I have, you know, a line of where I think he should be, and then you can see if he's getting a little bit above the line, tighten it up for a few days, and then get below the line. As long as you stay below the line, it should work out.
Yeah.
And now we have a few previous fights worth of data of what feels good for him for a weight cut, what his body weight is. He's not going to put on magically 5 pounds of muscle between now and his next fight. This same graph should work for the next few fights. As he gets a little older, maybe puts on some muscle over time, we can shift things a little, but this should work pretty well, I think.
So not overly stringent or specific. It's mostly just seeing what the number says and live based on that.
Yeah, that's all I'm giving him.
Yeah. It's actually really nice, considering how strict a lot of people will need to be just for like general weight loss.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let alone a like aggressive cut for fights. That's actually pretty slick.
Well, you could put out so much output for training you know, you got some leeway.
That's the other side of like fight training is like you should be able to actually eat quite a bit. It would seem like because you're busting your ass for hours every single day, no?
Yeah. Well, that's the part.
You know
that
how
I mean,
it
like
is if you eat eat to cover all of your training plus one extra hamburger. Now you're getting fat again.
Right.
So
right,
it's like it's always easy to out eat. You know,
you ever had that extra hamburger though, bro?
It tastes so good.
That's so good.
That extra one. There's something special about it.
Let's talk bonus fries, man.
Let's talk bonus fries. Oh man. But yeah, so with that, you know, kind of being able to see where I'm at, and then just kind of understanding food a little bit more. Like you can eat a small portion of like going out food, right? Going out dining or fast food, but that small portion is pretty much almost all your macros for that day. Whereas like good food is like chicken and rice. You can eat a lot of it. And you can still be in a deficit, so you don't have to feel so depleted all the time.
But yeah, because you gotta still do a date night here and there, all that stuff. So you don't want to be.
Well, that's the nice thing. Elena's pretty. If nobody knows, that's my girlfriend. Elena's pretty. She's super understanding about like you know where everything's at, you know how everything works. Because we had like when we first started dating, you know. We had this conversation where it's like, this is what I do. This is kind of like my thing. And, you know, she was super on board with it. And
it's the prenuptial conversation.
Yeah, pretty much. It was like a lot of my life, is, you know, and it does, you know, that's not to say that it doesn't, you know, there's not hiccups where it's just like, oh man, like, she wants a little more attention or something like that. But overall, I mean, like, she's great. I mean, she's been meal prepping for me and stuff. So I can not worry about. Yeah.
Yeah. You met her in camp. Wasn't it like 2 weeks out?
It was it was actually like two or one. Two
and you
or
were week. Like, I'm going to go out with this girl. I was like, man, are you sure? You're really close.
Yeah. Well, like,
it worked out.
Because at that point, I was just like, I was always like, oh, like a movie, you know, a movie wouldn't hurt anything. So I was just like,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's
so, right. Yeah.
So she decided she was down with cranky, low carb.
Surprisingly sensors. Enough, yeah. I've been trapping her. It's almost time for the feeding, so I don't get it.
Oh, snap. Gosh.
Love you, babe.
I'm just gonna let that one sit there. I'm gonna leave that silence in. I pressured you on this when we chatted the other time, but you referenced hopefully when the UFC calls. When's that?
I'm thinking again. Like I'm thinking by like hopefully like the end of this year. You know, I'm really shooting hard for this year.
There's nods from the adults in the room, so that actually doesn't sound too outlandish, or no?
Yeah, I think so.
A lot of times, you can have shortcuts or even just almost a guaranteed path nowadays with LFA is you win their title, you go to the UFC.
Yeah, most guys get snagged shortly thereafter.
He just needs that title shot and win it and maybe defend it once sometimes. Sometimes they just bring you right up after that, so.
That was actually going to be my question, because there isn't really an official...
No.
Here's
no.
your
no,
pipeline.
Your manager, you know, if your manager has a bunch of people already, they can get you in a little early, work some stuff. So you see that with certain teams.
Right.
The LFA route's a really good route because you're getting exposure. Ed Soares obviously works directly with UFC all the time, and he's the owner. So, yeah.
So when's the title fight?
I don't know. I'm hoping that's the big thing.
I'm
hoping that's the big thing. If it is, then, you know, I'm going to train like hell for it. If it's like just a main event or something like that, then you know I'll still train like hell for it. But I don't know. Maybe I might want to take like a June fight, depending if that is. I still gotta talk to my manager about it real quick. But yeah.
Yeah, it depends on how big the big thing is.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Let me ask you this: you win a title, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and you get called. Yep. What is your main training focus at that point? How do I frame that better?
Like, what am
you,
I working
What are
on?
You missing for that level?
Like, as far as, like...
What do you need to improve on? What's
As
the
a fighter,
to,
what
like,
do you really
yourself?
Gotta...
Yeah. Oh, I would say probably, you know, I love working on my wrestling because I know I'm not... You know, I would say I'm pretty good, but I'm not, you know, I'm not collegiate by any means, right? And I think it's just such a, like, I love the mentality that you get from doing it too, and just how drained you are after, you know, like, drills and practices. So I'd probably say, like, wrestling is probably the number one thing that's on my mind that I have to, that I work on.
That's because you want to. It's because you like it.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you suck at?
Oh, well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. That I'm not good at my wrestling. I would.
So you do like it. It happens to also be your weakness.
Yes.
Good. Yeah. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
It's a good, happy coach answer.
Yeah.
So you like candy or food. I like it. It also happens to be my weakness.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Well, it dictates where the fight is, too.
Yeah.
And that's...
Say that again. What did you say?
Wrestling dictates where the fight is. How good your wrestling or counter wrestling is. You get to decide where the fight takes place, and depending on how you stack up with somebody. That's a great thing to be able to decide.
That's why it's when they run the stats of people's background in the UFC, it's like wrestling.
The men's division for sure.
Is that different than the women's?
Yeah.
What's the background there?
Thai boxing.
Why?
Not many women are wrestling since they're 7 years old, so they don't have to come up against it. So it makes, but there are a lot of girls who've been striking since they were young. So I think it's just a matter of there's more elite level competitors with that background. I think it'll change with all the young ladies coming up now, but
pretty quickly, I would imagine. Yeah,
I think so.
Santos's sister would be one of them.
Oh my god, 100%.
She's a little monster. Yeah, have you followed her at all?
No, I don't think so. God. Let's talk
about it. So
my sister
now, as a,
I want to adopt her
as a student, as like a 15-year-old, is already a 2-time state champion and placed, what was it, second or third at Fargo. And she just actually she did teams in
Rochester,
Washington. Yeah, Washington for nationals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's she wrestle?
She's at Apple Valley now. Which,
so we got Pie Guy instead of a elite level happy Apple Valley wrestler on the podcast.
You know what? What was I thinking? Yeah. Hold on, let me make a quick little call.
And now I know who's not getting pie. Yeah,
so. And they're all in this room. Fuck everybody.
But did she, I feel like I remember her calling one time being upset because she won girls state and took like fourth at boys state or something.
Yeah.
She was upset about this.
Yeah, she's definitely like just try hard. Like she likes to every, because after state we were talking a little bit and she said that she had felt like she didn't, even though she won state, she didn't pin the last girl, whereas like last year she did, and she didn't feel right about it. She said she wasn't as like thrilled as last year.
She's slipping a bit, obviously.
Maybe. And I was like, she, even though it was 14, it was 16-2 or 16-0.
So she squeaked it out.
just barely. Man, that girl would have got up, that extra two would have.
That's either really good or probably bad. The fact that is like a disappointing win.
That's
a good mentality.
Yeah.
Hopefully, that's a good thing.
I hope that's a good thing. But I just pretty much said, like, I don't know. Now you're pretty much at a point where it's like maybe you're just expecting to pin every girl that you go against. Because I think she's got like 100 pins now or something like that.
What is even good? 20 probably in the season.
I don't know. I'm not sure. For girls wrestling, I don't know. I don't know the stats on that.
So they have separate girls championships and presumably separate girls brackets at a lot of tournaments, but not a lot of separate girls programs yet. Is that right?
They're starting to come up. Like schools, certain school districts will have a good sized girls program.
But it's still part of the boys.
Yes, it's right? Still part of the boys.
A lot of the time, they're still wrestling together.
Yeah.
But
championship time or whatever.
Yeah, but there are some third party clubs like MN MN Wrestling, MN Elite Wrestling. What was it? There's one in...
There's one like Paramount or
something. Yeah, Pinnacle. Pinnacle is also one. Storm. Storm is actually a really big one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they if parents want to take their girls there for more training partners, then that's usually where they go.
So how often do you wrestle her?
Well, now that she's starting to beat me up, you know, I mean, it's I avoid it now. I was like, all right, no, you're getting me too good.
Can't do it too close to a fight. It break down his ego.
She does wrestle at the weight class that I fight at, actually.
Yeah, man. She's a training partner to be.
It's perfect.
I know. No, I just got to teach her how to strike a little bit, but she's hesitant on that right now. Every time I ask or bring it up, she was like, why can't you just teach me at home? It's like, cause that's not how it works. You know, just, like it's just the vibe is not here, man.
I think it's hard though to go back down to the bottom of the totem pole in another art, like when you're used to being the top dog in the room, one of them, and then you like go back to the bottom to learn something new. I think that can be really hard, particularly when you're young.
Yeah.
I suppose you're still like fighting, but holy crap, is that a different skill set? But like, you also got to realize it's a different skill set. You're going to suck at it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we got a baker instead of an elite athlete.
Yeah. Back to me.
What's your background, brother, since we got you here?
Martial arts wise?
Yeah, yeah.
Got into jiu-jitsu right before I went to Iraq, 2005. Used to box and do some jiu-jitsu with the Marines on base in Iraq. Came back 2007, started training at the Warriors Cove. 2 years later, did my first pro fight. And then I had 19 pro fights. Fought for LFA.
You did amateur fights?
No, all pro. Back then, like
you didn't take amateur.
Amateur was like just starting up in Minnesota at that
sounds
time.
Sounds so much cooler that way. Nah, I just went right to pro. People now don't have any idea.
I fought for $100 for my first pro fight.
Yeah. Against pro.
Professional gets against professional gets paid. That's paid.
Against Faustino, the mean Latino Moreno.
Good memory.
Was he mean?
He was mean. We went to go touch gloves. He did the fake glove touch.
Punch you right in the mouth.
And then punched me right in the face. And I lift him up and slammed him on his head and teed off on him until I stopped the fight. It was great.
Nice. That's a cooler name. Say it again.
Faustino, the mean Latino.
Yeah.
Moreno.
It all rhymes. That's very cool. Did you go by the baker?
Yeah. My first fight. Yeah, I think I was. Yeah.
Were you already doing pies then?
No, I was at cakes and stuff for my buddies. And just I was still learning a lot more about pies and other stuff, but.
I like incidental and accurate fight names. Agreed. Like butcher. Like he worked for a butcher for a very short period of time.
Candlestick maker over here.
Yeah. Baker. Yeah, yeah. This is ridiculous. Because they're all so silly most of the time anyway.
Yeah,
yours is cool. Like, I like yours. But I am
who
of the
gave
Viking
you your name,
people,
actually?
So. Ring announcer for Lion Fight.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Can't pick your own. You know? Yeah. It's got to be bestowed upon you. That's the thing about nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
Can't pick your own. So, no, yeah, it was my
what's
first
yours?
Fight.
Sandman.
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. I knew that. Yeah,
mine actually was it wasn't given to me by anybody in the gym. So, bring up some past over here. I dated this girl in high school, and when I you know on one of the occasions when I met her dad, she called me. It was like, hey, it's the Sandman. And for some reason, like, that just kind of, like, stuck in my brain for a long time. I was like, yeah, it's kind of clever. Like, it was new because, you know, usually it's always, like, Santa or Sandy Toes or a good friend of mine, Angelique, calls me Sandy V. You know, that's
You shouldn't be saying any of these into microphones.
I had to throw that one in. That was, yeah.
Well, she calls you Baby Bear Cub, too.
Yeah.
Which is also accurate.
Yeah.
Why?
It's a vibe.
It is a vibe, that's for sure.
She was definitely kind of like an aunt for sure. Like she was like, she was the loudest person in kids class. Ben knows this person too. In kids class, as loud as possible, she walks in and takes a big sniff and like, you know, cause everyone's working, sweating. And, she was like, why does it smell like dick skin in here? This is the kids class.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, she was one of like the best personalities. Yeah, it was just unfiltered, like just blue collar, unfiltered, everything. It was hilarious.
White trash is what you're the word you're looking for. These are my people. It's not disparaging.
Yeah.
You are who you are.
Yeah, right? It's pretty much, pretty much her language. Yeah.
She's strong as ox, too. I met her when she was lifting at horsepower.
Oh, did you know her? Oh, shit.
Met her a couple times. We see each other a lot, but... Yeah, she was lifting over there. I forget what she's squatting, like 500?
She threw out her back, racking it. I think she leaned forward a little bit.
Oh, yeah, man. Her and, Heather Baker, a couple of those ladies could really put up weight.
I like that.
I forgot horsepower is a thing. Is that still around?
No, he shut down over COVID. He did a little underground and then gave up on it.
Walls killed him. He bought, the family had a tire business, which... That's never going to go out, obviously. I think it was his dad, so he kind of took that over because I think his dad retired or something. So it was a seamless transition. But
he won't get tired of that.
Yeah.
Hey!
The best part is telling a pun watching Santos's face and counting the seconds until he recognizes what's
happening. I mean...
Well, any joke, really.
It was a hard. Yeah, what time is it right now? Hold on. It's 3 a.m. 3 p.m. I just woke up.
Caitlin's 2 energy drinks in.
That's right.
5 into her day. 2 into this podcast.
Pick up where you left off about you.
Oh, fighting and whatnot?
Yeah.
Fighting.
Because you're coaching fighters now, let's discuss qualifications.
I was teaching full-time, so Santos was one of my students. Well, not one. I wasn't his main instructor, I don't think, because he was down at Burnsville a little more. But I would come down to my fight camps, and this little guy would work in a little bit, and I kept guillotining him. And I had to tell him every day, "This is you're shorter than me. Keep head position. Stop letting me choke you." So I got to interact with him a little bit when I was teaching. I was teaching full-time. It was my full-time job, and I really enjoyed it. But my wife and I were looking to have kids, and then we got licensed for foster care. And then it's like you can get a baby on 24 hours notice. And my wife, she's a server. She's a head server for Meritage. It's like a fancy French restaurant downtown St. Paul. It's like, how are we going to – serving every night, and I'm teaching every night. How are we going to have kids?
Right.
So I thought, I can stop teaching and ramp up my bakery, which I had started as a hobby, as a part-time thing.
That's how it starts.
I'll switch it over to full-time. So 2021, I went full-time with the bakery. So I don't teach anymore. I still just train a little bit, drop in. I train a little bit here at Strike Institute and a little bit at the Cove. And the bakery is my full-time deal now.
Nice.
But it'd be fun to one day come back and have a couple more fights just for kicks. But
sure. Once literally.
Yeah.
Did you catch that pun?
I don't even try anymore. It just happens.
He wasn't even listening. He's no idea what's going on.
Well, couple sentences strung together that's longer than 3 seconds. He's somewhere else. You can see in his eyes. He's not in the same room anymore.
You gotta bring up high points, so I'm back engaged again. Or when I was in school, my robotics instructor, he would randomly start yelling. Because, obviously people's eyes are going to start to glaze over. And that
worked for you?
That worked for me. It kept me awake, that's
noted.
For sure. Yeah.
Or you just say, I had to give up my teaching schedule boobs so that I could go full-time baking. Just do that kind of thing. Just
that
throw a key word in
that
there.
That would definitely.
It's like smelling salts, like audible smelling salts.
Yeah.
Auditory. Smelling salts. That's great.
What else? What else should we cover? No pressure.
Dang. Let's see.
Caitlin had the scariest surgery ever other week.
Yeah, what the hell's wrong with your neck there?
Finally got neck surgery.
Yeah.
I had kind of been kicking the can down the road, so I got a 2-level disc replacement two weeks ago, Monday. Yeah, it was time. I found out. I got a real bad stinger before I signed with PFL, kind of at the end of my fight career. And I was like, well.
As I recall, this was exposed on the podcast when you were in camp still, and I had to go back and delete a portion of the conversation.
I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it
was a bad
stinger.
And then
you leaked it to her opponent, though.
Definitely.
Yeah. Right to her.
Gotta make money off of this somehow.
Oh, man, she kept going for headlock takedowns, too.
Interesting.
Of course she did.
Interesting.
It's all clear now. I did a couple epidural injections because I figured they wanted to do a fusion at the time. And the problem with getting a fusion in your 30s is everything above and below, it's likely to break down. And I figured if we can kick the can down the road a little ways, it'll be technology will be better. So
breaking down fast enough as it is, damn it.
Honestly, yeah. Though, you know, and I always worried too, if you fuse your neck, how are you going to take punches after that? Because now it's a hinge point, right? So now your brain is taking all that impact that it otherwise wouldn't. So that was part of the reason I didn't want to do it while still competing. But yeah, finally got it done, and it actually already feels better than before the surgery.
Good.
So just a few more weeks, and then they think it'll be back to 100% holding pads and all that jazz. So
what about like Peruvian neckties and stuff, though? How's that going to feel?
I guess we'll have to find out. You can help me out with that, Ben.
Yeah.
So say again what it was. What they did.
It is a two-level disc replacement. I had this great surgeon. His name's Dr. Chris Martin. He's at the U of M. And he went in and it was C5 through 7. And the disc material had just been, you know, lifetime of combat sports. It was my first surgery. But they basically pulled all that out. There had been some bony growth because your body is amazing and it'll try to stabilize any unstable joint the way it can. But then it starts impinging on the nerves and stuff. Like, I was waking up, I couldn't feel my fingers in the morning and stuff at that point. But it's amazing now.
Do they, like, grind down the overgrowth then?
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Put in this
they
new flexible
ground that down
material
and then
or whatever?
Put those in. And
what's the material? What are they?
Titanium composite.
That seems not flexible.
It's not. But they, you know, and that's, it's relatively new, but they think they'll last like 70 years.
That's about what you need. That
sounds should take me to the end, hopefully.
Do they just go in the front or they go front?
Yeah,
and
they
back?
Went in the front. People on the podcast can't see that, but yeah. I have a pretty sweet Frankensteiner scar on the front of my neck. And it's painful, but not, it's like soft tissue painful. The actual neck felt better almost right away. So, but it felt like just like having like a, you ever have like a super hard fight. It kind of felt like that the first few days after, and then now it's mostly not bad.
Did you join the controversial podcast statement club and say that you've never had a surgery, a fight-related injury surgery or something like that?
What this is the first one.
After like 20 years of fights and shit?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
And 19 fights, no surgeries. It's got to be smart.
Yeah. I had a coach I once talked to who said he felt that sometimes people getting into professional athletics is more just how well can their body work around injuries realistically, like how well does it adapt. And I've thought about that a lot because I know a lot of people, you guys know Nick Thompson too, he's got a torn labrum, he's got a missing ACL, but he's still able to do mostly everything, and he was his whole career. I bet there's a relationship with that
for sure, because you're all 20 years in, same amount of fights, same amount of training, same amount of damage, similar odds
exactly.
of injury, like who's sucking it up better and working around it. Greg's got drop foot. He can't even.
No, his foot doesn't work. It's like
hook.
A stake.
But he's like, yeah. I still play this guard and that guard. I just don't use this foot. It's like, what the fuck?
Oh, it's hilarious.
I got both feet and I can't do shit.
Watch somebody try to leg lock him on it too because they don't realize. Like, yeah. The foot's dead. It doesn't matter.
Break it. Whatever. Yeah, that's wild. That's good. That's good mileage. I think it was Rocco on here. Was referenced somebody having this or that injury. He's like, I don't get it. People with these injuries. And it's like, you've been training jiu-jitsu like every day of your life for like 25 years and you've never had an injury. He's like, wow, my shoulder kind of clicks. It's like, what? How's that possible, dude? What are the odds of that? Doing anything and being injury free is fucking wild. So that's crazy.
I think you get good at training, choosing your partners too toward the end. Like, I got a lot more picky as things went.
That's where that started, as I recall, correct? It was a partner that you'd then avoided or whatever.
And it wasn't, I don't even think it was intentional,
no.
But
no.
You know, when you train with somebody, there's trying to win, and then there's, you can feel when somebody's joint is at its fullest extent, and if it's about to go, right? Everybody here knows what that feels like. And there's some people that want to win more than they're worried about doing that. And you just got to avoid them. Doesn't mean they're, you might be a great person to get a beer with, but man, not worth your paycheck when you're fighting professional or using your body in a professional way, right? So
you gotta match energies for sure.
But yeah, on the mend now.
I So I've also been going up and training with the guys at Start too.
Yeah, yeah.
With Brock.
Yeah.
Bunch of good guys out there. Get good rounds with like Angel and some of the other smaller guys who are going up there too.
I hit him up to come on and.
Oh, did you?
And talk some shit too, so maybe I'll do him and Brock together.
Yeah.
Oh, Brock's a riot.
For sure. Yeah, oh. It's got to happen. Yeah. It was part of the original suggestion for this today, and I was like, well, I only got 4 mics.
Yeah.
Arguably, I should say some shit. Okay, he's out of town. We'll go to him. You know?
Yeah. No, he's funny as hell.
What's your is like this your striking place?
Yep.
And mostly wrestling?
Yeah, mostly jiu-jitsu up pretty there? Much like the mostly MMA and like obviously his. I would say his emphasis is definitely like wrestling and jiu-jitsu. But lots of MMA though.
How much time do you spend training MMA? Like not jiu-jitsu here, striking here.
MMA rounds you're
like
talking
this is
about?
This is I'm training MMA.
I would say
percentage wise or whatever.
Probably like 6 or 8 hours. Kind of distributed, and then everything else is separate.
Like within a week?
Yeah, within a week, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many total training hours?
That
was going to be my response. But
yeah. That one was something. Because I pretty much train every day. So before, but thankfully now not anymore. So I was working at Boston Scientific, and I was on the 3/12 schedule. Saturday to Monday. So on Saturdays and Sunday after work, I would have to try and, you know, get a few guys together who would be willing to, you know, get working in the evening on the weekends, which is not, you know, it's kind of hard because everyone's, you know, either got a life going on or they got plans, you know, like just there's a lot of things going on. But luckily, Reggie and Darian would be game and Kuchlong too would be game and come in, hold pads and shoot the shit a little bit. Kind of just kind of casual pad holding, but still something to do.
That's definitely the anti-fun work schedule.
Yeah, it was not. That's it terrible. Was not great. And then the demand is absolutely insane because they make defibrillators that you insert into people, and so pretty much like they're just trying to pump out as many as can. So you just got to keep these things going. It's pretty much like just. Throw a bandit on it and make sure the line is still running. But anyway, so.
For 12 hours?
For 12 hours.
Bro,
dude.
I would fuck that simple job up.
Oh, man. And like, so you only have to do stuff if like the operators have a tech call. So there could be some days where it's like there are hardly any calls and you just get to sit on your butt most of the day, which is nice. But then there are some days where it's like the board is just lit up. And it's just like call after call after call after call after call. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Yeah. And then, you know, and then I have to try and stay disciplined and be like, all right, I'm just going to go to the gym. I'm going to hit. It's only going to be 5 rounds, run. And then I get to go home and sleep. But, yeah, trying to keep that up was rough. Especially after 12 hours, it's kind of like mentally draining because, you know, you're using your head to keep everything going. And dealing with
just having to focus.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a me problem.
Our defibrillators working depends on Santos's focus.
Yes.
After 12 hours.
Yeah. There's going to be a wave of deaths across the United States
gonna be
next
there's
year.
There's
going to
be a recall.
Yeah, there's going to be a large recall coming up.
Defibrillator just manufactured from Santos's dates of employment.
Did you say you left that job?
Yeah. So,
so you quit a job so you could train better and more?
So, yeah, I luckily one of my sponsors, Megan Michael, was super, like, just I can't even explain how grateful I am for this, but she pretty much just said that, like, she wants me to stop working so that way I can focus full time on training and just getting ready for fights. And she would pretty much just pay me while I do it. And I was like, dude, like.
It's fucking wild.
It's yeah. Fucking wild. It's
so
wild.
Everybody go buy a candle. Doesn't she sell?
Literally, yeah. Yes. 100%. Everyone go buy a candle. Megan Michael, like the MM Candle Company. Go check them out. They smell great. If you know, if you want a special date night with your girl or something, or with your man,
You know? She makes man candles, which is nice. You know, like
she calls them mandals.
What do you
right?
What do you get, guys? Like mandals? Yeah. But honestly, like
mandals,
you know,
could be something else. Though, yeah.
It's cool. They come in like a really nice like wooden case. She makes cologne too, and it's not like a like spray on like your. Yeah, it's like you rub it, and then you kind of just, it's like an oil almost, and you just rub it on yourself. And
it's dignified. You're not spraying yourself.
Yeah, you're like, shh, you're not like a 13-year-old and sprayed Axe on you in the locker room. But
that's fucking clutch. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you can train 15 hours a week or whatever you're doing.
I never even gave you a number, did I?
I don't know. It don't matter. We're just chatting.
Man, with all the running and lifting and everything.
Yeah, with honestly, I would say put in almost like 30 hours for almost 40.
Bro.
And he's at kind of like that tough spot when you're right before the big show, because you have to train full time to compete with everybody else to get that bump, but you're still having to support yourself most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at the money.
Yeah.
That could be coming, but I got to get there.
You got to go in the hole for a while, like on just your energy. Right. It's a tough spot, and I think that's where a lot of people kind of lose their stamina.
For sure. Yeah. What a privileged position.
I feel so like I can't even explain. I was so happy, like I don't know. I called both of my coaches, and I was just like guess what just fucking happened to me right now? Like you won't understand.
Said, watch your language, Santos. Tell Bleep me again, that out in a nicer way.
So did you happen to see my fight shirts by chance that I made?
I almost wore that today for a joke.
I don't think I did. No.
So my what I had was like the Sandman, and then like it had
the
Energizer Bunny, but on the drum it said what was it? It was this nightmare keeps fucking going, right? On the drum.
Yeah.
And so instead of just like leaving it or whatever, you took a Sharpie to it
and colored
in the drum. So it's only, you only don't see the F word in there. And he was like, here, it doesn't swear anymore. Now I can wear it around children.
It's a fair point. Yeah. The same impact.
Yeah.
When you see something blacked out, you just assume.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's pretty much.
All right, we need to do this again when you're in the UFC then, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Which
next year?
Hopefully soon. Yes. Within the next year.
Any other closing thoughts from the coaches? Fucking free for them, by the way. Could be a separate episode. You want to go off on a rant about something? I'll take the content. Feel free.
Politics episode, I'm in.
Let's definitely do it. In for that. But
I mean, we've had some good road trip conversations in this crew. Let me think. I suppose we have a moment.
That actually is something I've tried to throw out to people like Ben Locke, and I've told him a few times. I'm like, if you're ever just philosophizing as a coach and you want to get a message out, record it, send it to me. Free episode for me. Fucking A.
Direct link to the people.
Say what?
Direct link to the people through you.
Hopefully. It's kind of the idea. I can't offer much. I need you people. I just have the mics.
Just the conduit.
I need you to teach me how to do a proper bench press.
Oh, we can fucking do that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've been trying to get more into like bench pressing a little bit in between camps. And every time I feel like I'm doing it wrong because it's just like oh.
There's maybe something there. But
yeah.
Almost everybody benches wrong.
Yeah.
Like you can watch some fights and mimic a jab. You won't be good at it, but you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Where are you going to watch a bench press? You find it online and be like, okay, but like, there's just so much nuance to the bench press.
Oh yeah,
you could probably do the female version where you back arch,
really
like
watching somebody else
a million miles. Yeah,
it's also always just
dude,
impressive
it looks like
shit.
Their back is gonna
so you're like, oh, and then you forget to like watch it. Yeah, we can definitely do a little bench boot camp.
Yeah,
bench is the one of the three, the big three lifts, the power lift. Like you can squat fine, I'm sure. Your deadlift is probably fine, but my bench is a fucking disaster.
My deadlift is actually horrible. I
really?
It's not that I can't lift heavy.
Well, you shouldn't do it.
It's just that because every time I've done it, I've done it wrong to the point where I've hurt like hurt my lower back.
So this is really
the risk reward ratio for deadlifts.
There's almost nobody who won't pick up from a body lock. Yeah. What would be different?
Normally,
where
most
times, center of your gravity
having
is.
That weight tilt forward at that sheer
angle.
Back. I don't know. You're not even a lanky guy, and you must see people get injured in deadlift all the time. That don't know what they're doing, and they.
Like, I'll give you that. Yeah.
I mean, not people. Your coach. I'm assuming.
No, there have been a couple, but like most people don't know how to do most things. So most of the people you see doing things are doing them wrong. And if it's sports, it's injury prone.
How about that?
Generalize it as much as possible. It
seems like a lot of the higher level athletes, the risk reward ratio isn't there for if you're not competing in deadlift. Why do traditional deadlift? Why not do trap bar deadlift, where it's much safer angle?
And then just it's only an accessory type of building tool anyway. Like, get it good, get safe, arguably good, and stop your worry there, and just practice it.
I messed my back up doing it, and I'm like tall, lanky, and have really long legs and short torso. It's like opposite of what you want.
Yeah, you had the lift working against
you. That was like the only lift where I got halfway strong for my size. I was doing 400 when I weighed 185.
Yeah.
And then, like, shortly after that, back was gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's
and that's the thing
forever.
Is, the more I do it, the better I need to be at it, which means the more I have to specialize.
Mm. Yeah.
And if I'm fighting, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
I don't, you know.
And the energy, like the recovery time for, like, the whole body is so much energy.
So that's
just one thing.
This will be a good one. That's something that is an interesting wrinkle in the fight world, I think, is strength and conditioning is good, but sometimes I don't know if this happens in other sports, but strength and conditioning coaches sometimes have a hard time understanding their second fiddle.
Incorporating it, yeah.
Yeah, or understanding, like, this isn't the primary thing. And I don't know if it's the nature of it is we don't have a season. Like, you're just like, oh, there's a fight in 3 weeks, or there's a fight in 2 months. But that's like a interesting thing that I think leads to a lot of burnout in a weird way. And maybe it's just the nature of too many chefs in the kitchen type of thing.
Probably starting there for sure, yeah. So if you got a striking guy, a grappling guy, a nutrition guy, and a weights guy, that's getting fucking
that
mad.
Guy doesn't know how many rounds you're doing and what intensity the rounds are. Because you could tell your coach, I'm doing 5 rounds this day, 2 rounds that day, but who's going to show up that day? It could be easy rounds or hard rounds.
100%.
He doesn't know. You don't
and
know
who
until
you're doing
you
those
there.
Rounds with makes a
you
big
don't know
difference.
Until you're there that day.
And then you get to the rating of perceived exertion thing. If I'm going to go off of that, most athletes, particularly fighters, particularly the bros, are never going to give me an honest score. And in their head, they're trained to not believe
that
anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
5, maybe a 6.
My recovery is not a 4 out of 10. It's an 8 out of 10. I'm doing good. Yeah. All right, well, let's lift.
Mm-hmm.
And then snap. That's
I think
the
it
bitch
really,
of that. Yeah.
Really competitive. I remember actually talking to Matt Miller about that because he had a board with the top lifts. And I was like, I think it's really hard for fighters to not try to get on that board even when they shouldn't, because they should be
where
focused on fighting. The gym is closed since closed, but it was when Horsepower was around.
Oh, that one,
a lot of local MMA fighters were out there.
Yeah,
a lot of local MMA fighters trained there. Yeah, and it's just like they're so hyper-competitive. They're not going to look at that and go, yeah, but I'm not a weightlifter. I shouldn't worry about that.
Right.
Not in that. I mean, probably with
he had that board for his fighters or for everybody
just
in
the gym?
Just the gym,
like the top men and the top women at different lifts.
Right.
I didn't have a chance to make the board, so it didn't affect me.
I think if I would, I'm a fan of that kind of thing.
It was like
like leaderboard stuff, but I think I would have in a big banner unless you're a fighter.
But it's so, I mean, but they're not going to hear that. They're going to look at that and go, I can beat that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a funny thing. I think training hyper-competitive people, and I would say it's not even just with fighters, it's entrepreneurs are like that. You got to knock them down on weights if you're training them weightlifting. Because, like, they're, it's a different headspace.
Anybody that's building a thing, let's go.
Oh, yeah, they'll, like, you know, blow their knees out trying to lift something that's twice what they should be touching. Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting how,
like, just last week, a local judo jiu-jitsu cat, I'll leave his name out of it, reached out. He's like, I got to do something, man. These big guys are big, because he's a bigger dude, but not like a big dude. Like, sup, bro?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's just a big frame, tall cat with a big frame, you know, but he's built funky, not particularly stable, you know, and he, most coaches and like PTs are going to watch him walk and go, you know, there's just structural things that it's like, man, I'm glad you reached out for this, because I've been looking at you for a few years thinking, man, he could use some help, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got a cup, one thing like this weekend or next weekend, one thing like 2 or 3 weeks from now, and we're starting a strength program now. So my first note was like, this is going to be boring as hell, and you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
And you're going to look ridiculous because it's going to be this lamest, weirdest glute activation bullshit. You know what I mean? So I said, it's not going to negatively affect the upcoming stuff, but it ain't going to help. It is what it is for the next few months while we get you accustomed to this added work and just see where we can fit it in the program. You know, if that's not how you're approaching that, like, what is your schedule? Can I message your judo coach and this and that? Just to see how things are actually going, then it can be a recipe for disaster, I bet, big picture, long term.
No, exactly. I think there are many coaches who are aware of that, but it's an interesting thing. I don't know why it happens in MMA a lot. MMA more than Thai boxing, it seems. Maybe because more people are trying to do MMA as a career, though, so they're putting a little bit more into it.
It seems like the strength is even more important. And I mean,
when you can grapple.
From what I've seen,
Well, and you want to be the one, you want to be the champion of the champion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're on my weights program and you're winning shit and you're in the UFC, this is going to be good. So we're going to push you.
Fuck yeah.
Well, that's me talking.
That's me
and my shit. You're the center. I'm an ancillary player.
Mm-hmm.
I need to remember that, kind of how you, when you first started on this topic, like, you got to remember your second, third, fourth fiddle. Like, we can bail on strength guy 3 weeks out and going to be no problem really in the fight, you know? So I can't be trying to prove shit through you.
But that's
when you get into trouble.
It's true with that. I think it's true even with the specialty coaching though. Like, it's really easy for people to start only seeing it through the lens of their, or even just how they would win it, not how their fighter would win it, should win it, or could win it.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing you have to offer, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, unless you have a lot of well-rounded MMA experience, like, when we corner, like, I try to only interject if I see something real specific, because you guys are his main coaches. I used to coach, but if I see something I know is really specific, maybe I'll say a couple of words to him. But, like, you guys are the main coaches. Like, I know to step back, but I could see, like, if you're like his main jiu-jitsu coach, but you're not an MMA guy, you see a million jiu-jitsu things you could fix or that he could change.
Yeah.
But like, the striking might be more important this round. Let the striking person give their info. And if you only know jiu-jitsu and you never did MMA, you might not want to back down. You want to give him the little jiu-jitsu tips in that round.
Yeah.
But that's not what he needs, maybe, if the striking was where it should stay the next round.
So you need the conditioning coach to not want the fight to win by conditioning, and the jiu-jitsu coach to not want the fight to win by jiu-jitsu, and the striking coach. What we need is win the fucking fight.
Yeah.
Whatever gets us there.
Yeah.
But I think that too is because I think particularly in Minnesota, so many people are kind of piecing together camps. I think that's probably it. For young fighters coming up, like, thinking about the synergy between the people in your corner.
Well, and it's still new to a lot of us, too.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like if you had a Muay Thai program, well, MMA's getting huge. Okay, we're going to add these elements. Never balanced it before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they've never balanced this shit either, you know. It's just a growing sport problem.
Absolutely.
Definitely, to quote you again, though. The weights or conditioning coach is second fucking fiddle. Calm down. As the guy who would maybe be that, if anything, other than like podcast guy, why don't you take a step back, lifting coach guy.
Yeah. I used to do EMS with these, with this performance. They're not necessarily a clinic, but it's like a performance facility. This guy who...
Tell us all what EMS means.
Muscle stimulation. And so basically my conditioning coach pretty much would... Depending on how much you pay, they could either come to you or just go to the facility. I usually just went to this facility. So he was coming to me for a while. He just sticks some pads on you. And it's not like a TENS unit where it's like those small guys that you'd find on like Amazon. Like this is... the machine that he has is at the very least like $11,000. Like it's got all sorts of different frequencies on there that you can do for either working out, recovering, other programs where it'll, he says, like, it'll relax your body. So I would just go to him, and he would just have me do very light weighted activities, like just doing this with the pads on. And it, like, man, it just makes it feel like you're just lifting like 50 pounds. And even he would even have me like shadow box or something with it on. And it feels like you're trying to push through mud. And
the idea is you're exaggerating the impact of whatever activity you're doing at the time.
And the biggest thing is, like, you know, after a lift, you really feel it in your joints and your ligaments, like a lot of pain and aches. It wouldn't, like, that would pretty much not happen ever. Like I could feel like my muscles were worked, but I didn't feel like the joint pain or the ligament pain at all.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I'm not too familiar with that. I'd have to dig into it, check it out.
It's pretty expensive stuff. I could only do it for like a couple camps.
Are you a fan of eccentric training? Like muscle lengthening against resistance? Is the shortening? Like, is that something you guys do
I never
actively for your stuff?
Dabbled in terms of like putting other people on programs. I never dabbled much in anything that specific.
Sure.
Like the whole, like, we're going to break it into this part of the motion, that part of the motion. Mostly just from an entertainment value.
Sure.
You know, when you've got a big book of like regular people, some of whom are powerlifters, some of whom are becoming powerlifters or whatever. You know, in a general sense, the fitness industry is as much about engagement as anything.
Yeah, of course.
And that would fall under the list of training styles that are hellish and boring and very probably effective.
It's like repping it out, right?
I can have one or the other sort of thing, you know. Same thing with, like, people tying off. I forget what we call it.
Yeah, the
blood flow restriction training. It fucking sucks.
It sounds like so similar to the electrical version of
concept. We're going to exaggerate the work you are doing, so you're literally doing 8-pound dumbbell curls and getting more out of it. It's fucking terrible. Like, it might be the best training modality in the world. It's like if everybody ate and did food like a bodybuilder, let's say. This is not exactly correct, but, like, man, would the country be a little leaner, a little healthier. And man, does that suck.
Suicide rate will go through the roof.
Yeah, right. You know,
kill me now.
So it's just like anything. You pick any of these modalities and it's a trade-off. And then it goes, okay, what's my goal? Is it worth the suffering? You know, and is it time effective for me? Blah, 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 blah.
If you had somebody come to you and say they want to be a power lifter, how would you train them differently than like somebody trying to do it for fitness or another sport?
One of the things I would do is... So rephrase that for me.
Somebody comes in and says they want to be a world champion power lifter. What does your progression with them look like as opposed to somebody who's trying to come in as they're doing strength and conditioning secondary for their sport or just to be fit? Does it not look different?
It would look wildly different. And the first thing is just priority. Like I'm doing some barbell squats because I'm also a fighter and I want to build some strength. It's sixth down the list. You get busy 1 week, check it off. No big deal. Wouldn't bother me. But a power lifter just starting out, we're working toward getting 80%+ of their gym effort in the squat, the bench, and the deadlift. You know, all these other accessories and stuff. It actually would start less than that because you do all the kind of prehab PT dorky stuff.
Yeah.
Like, hey, can I feel my glutes flex at all? Because
I got to
do some deadlifts and some squats, you know. Build the body up from the garbage that it probably is. But the goal is to then spend weeks and weeks and weeks under a barbell in those three lifts. Unless that's like, let's say that's Santos's preference. When I do lift, I want squat, bench, dead. Okay, cool. Because preference is going to keep me adherent.
Yeah.
It's going to let me enjoy it. I'm going to get more out of it versus like an hour and a half of Bulgarian split squats or some bullshit, you know.
That sounds like hell.
Terrible, you know. But like, I mean, the bottom line there would be the specificity, in my opinion.
So you have a little bit more of a tilt toward durability, too, is what you're looking at for that. Developing durability for a power lifter.
Like, if you want to be an elite level power lifter, it's going to be 10+ years.
Yep.
Just like, you know, fights.
Yeah, yeah. This is a slow cook.
This is not a quick thing.
Totally.
And it's even worse in like Olympic lifting because the arc to safe.
The technical skill is
the
much
arc
more.
To safe in the Olympic lifts is super long. Good is even long. I mean, it's just I can have you safely squat, bench, and dead right now.
Sure.
I can make you cry because you don't understand the snatch right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the first year of trying to be a power lifter equates to probably the first 3 to 5 of trying to be an Olympic lifter. You know, so that's going to play a role in it. Just sort of like, oh, I want to be a boxer.
Yep.
I've got X number of punches I can throw. You know, the body movement, the head movement, compared to, hey, I want to be an MMA fighter. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
A much longer developmental arc. So durability, I mean, you want durability in everything.
Of course.
But, like, durability is required when you're, like, 10 years to maybe get paid $500 to do this work. You know, like, you better be fucking durable at that point.
Yeah. Did you, maybe I missed it, did you compete? Were you a powerlifter?
I only dabbled in some powerlifting personally. I chose powerlifting as like an outlet for fitness clients. And then I worked with, I was a strength and conditioning coach at a high school too. So I started a club there because just like whatever, you know. And it's sort of like starting a 5K running club at the YMCA. Yeah. But I was like, fuck that. Squatting, benching, and deadlifting, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, my competition was strongman.
Okay.
For years and years, did like, I don't know, 30 or 40 strongman competitions.
Oh, no shit.
Different levels. Did some arm wrestling, some Highland Games, meathead shit.
That's awesome.
Powerlifting was always too boring.
Yeah.
But then you grow up, you get a real job, and you got fitness clients that have real jobs, and you're like, oh, it's time conducive.
Yeah.
And they can get positive feedback inside of 18 months. Instead of waiting years to get good at the 12 events at a strongman competition or whatever.
Yeah. And that concrete weight number going up, I think it's so empowering for people.
Fuck yeah.
And it kind of takes the focus. Because so often, right, in America, we're like focused on the aesthetic of what happens as you get more fit. When it's like you can literally see you got somebody benching more than they weigh now.
Yeah.
And they could barely pick up the bar before, right?
Well, and not even that, but like, I mean, I'll use one example. She's 5'1", 5'2", and quite heavy set, north of 200 pounds. Never did sports, largely a stay-at-home mom. And at 3-4 years in, squatted 240, benched 125, which is solid for women, particularly of that frame, and deadlifted 275, 280. Like, you bring that up at your mom group. You know, it's like, that's like leadership into awesome. Like, you're doing what?
Yeah.
You're doing powerlifting? What the fuck is that? You know? But in terms of, like, you know, seeing the numbers go up and up and up, holy shit, is it a self-esteem booster?
Uh-huh.
You know?
That's cool.
400-pound deadlift. Client of mine, Susan, in her second or third meet.
Really?
Just a fucking animal. Got to a 400-pound deadlift.
That's awesome.
That we actually, Minnesota, we're totally going off the rails here, but in Minnesota, we have probably the best female powerlifter in the world. And she was the strong chick on the soccer team in college. So she started looking, when she finished playing college soccer, started looking up like meets, and she was like, oh, wow, I could be a record holder, like right off the bat.
Oh, like she knew her weightlifting numbers.
Yeah, she's
numbers
like, oh, I can lift this, and I can lift this, and oh, the records are only this. Okay, cool. And now she's like the best in the world, like 4 or 5, 6 years later, whatever it is.
That's so cool how
it's
that happens.
Wild.
It's like you start doing something just for, you know, shits and giggles or whatever. And
it or it, like in my case, people would do it because I'd say I think you'd be good at that. And I was right every fucking time. Not because I know anything, but oh, if you practice this very well, you consistently train, you regularly compete to test it.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Make millions. You know, like that's how you get good at shit. It's just a matter of durability and consistency and sticking with the damn thing.
Yeah.
But I was right. I was right every single time. I think you'd be good at this. You're like, oh, really? You think so? And I'm like, I have no fucking idea. But also, I kind of do.
You
like,
must see something in them, though, to think it.
So sometimes it depends. Yeah. Like I told a lot of people, hey, I think you'd be good at that because you kind of, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
if you give up after two meets, no, you won't. Okay, cool. But then there'd be people where you're like, I even said to Susan, I was like, I say this to a lot of people, but with you, I really fucking mean it. Because I was just watching her lift. I'm like, I got to be honest. If you don't know what you're doing per what she said, she's like, I don't know. I just found this program on the internet.
And sure.
She's just slinging 200-pound barbells. I'm like, okay, this one's different. You know, so there is that. It's sort of like the first time you watch somebody kind of stumble through whatever fighting drills. And you're like, holy shit, nobody's that good the first time.
Yep.
You know, same idea.
100%.
How often do you find yourself saying that to people who look like they're talented versus someone who just looks like they're being consistent?
Nobody looks like either of those to me.
Okay. Well, like, I guess, like,
you, is that a weird answer?
No. That makes a lot of sense.
The talent I would outwardly see for like powerlifting, just to stick with it, would be just leverages.
Yeah.
Like I watched you squat down to grab your shoes. Hey, you gotta, despite your height, let's say, like he's talking about, he's got leverage disadvantage. Well, depends on how those limb segments work out, right? Yeah. And there, I can think of one gal in particular, just accidentally, the most perfect, clean, crisp, straight barbell squat. Well, she's like 6'3".
Yeah.
I guarantee you, she grew up with coaches saying, you're not gonna like squats.
Yeah, but you're right.
Because they never had her try or didn't know nothing about it.
No, but then it's in your head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why, hey, I think you'll be good at that is an amazing thing to say. I have no fucking idea, but now it's in your head, the positive things in your head, you know?
But I think in fighting, there's a lot of that too, and just in terms of like how you would teach technique with striking. Ben can speak more to grappling, but I think the same thing tracks is like how your game is going to work out best. Like you can train everybody to do the same drill, but how you might fight with one set of dimensions is different than what's going to be high percentage for you with another set. Like one of our coaches here, Nora, she and I, like we stand next to each other, our hips are the same height, but her femur is 2 inches longer. Yep. So she can knee me from further away than I can knee her, right? And she's shorter, so it doesn't feel like she should be able to. So there's an element to that. And I think sometimes that happens here too, where people feel like they're not good at something. It's like, no, like you just got to tweak the technique a little bit for your build. And there's people who are super successful. Like if you watch Ben's fights, for example, his body lock, he can straight knee from having his arms all the way around somebody easily if you want to, right? He's long enough to be able to hold on. Most people can't hold on and get their hips far enough out to do it. Like there are a number of things that like work specifically for somebody's game, especially after 20 fights. So it's interesting hearing about it in another sport, like how it plays out in another sport.
As an attributes thing, like I did a lot of squatting, deadlifting, yoke walks, farmer's walks, a lot of things in a certain plane where stability is key. If I have 550 pounds on my back, I don't want to be wobbling around and swinging. So natural traits, genetic tendencies are one thing, but it's also not a surprise that my internal external hip action to re-guard is fucking terrible.
Oh, of course.
Because you
want your hip to be as sturdy as possible.
Now, I can... If I show you like my sumo deadlift and I squat up and down, you're like, oh, this is mobile, especially for a big guy. And it's like, well, watch me try to fucking re-guard because, you know, it's that, again, sport specificity thing. For sure.
That's kind of fun. It's a fun thing.
With the grappling session, right?
Sure.
Sweet. Just making sure.
We're going to do like savages. I don't have the proper outfit.
Do we do it while we eat pie?
Winner gets pie.
Well, I eat pie. Not sure. What did you say? Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just saying, I think that's like a fun thing to play. One of the more fun parts of game planning, too, is looking at those two things and how they stack up personality-wise and build-wise.
Yeah, their mindset, how much risk taking they like doing or not.
How
they can manage their emotions in a fight.
It's like you get a different puzzle every time.
You take way more risks than I do, so it drives me wild trying to coach you sometimes because you're way riskier. That's
so much fun.
In certain times, and I'm like, I would never stop it. You can still win the fight but taking a little less risk,
dude,
and wait longer in the fight to take the risk until you need to.
What is it? In the last fight, you were like, so I did. Now that I remember it, so the guy did have one really good attempt at an armbar. And, yeah.
You got out of that well, but yeah.
Yeah. And in the last, like, what was it, 30 seconds or something, bench out, if you don't get armbarred, you'll win this.
Yell across the cage.
What was it? Brock's wife, who's the commission lady. What was her name again? Sam.
She's on the commission?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And we're going back down the stairs. She was like, why would you say something like that? Like, well, he needed to know. Just wanted to let him know.
You know what, though?
I think taunting Santos is one of the best ways to encourage him.
I don't think it was bad for the other guy to hear that.
In my opinion, and I've never coached fighters, but that's the perfect cue. What the fuck else are you going to say on game day, right? Like, other than, hey, stick to the plan. Remember, jab, whatever the hell. Shit like that is, like, there's nothing you can say to a power lifter on meat day, hardly, unless, you know, they're a head case and it's got to be a therapy session or whatever. But, like, people, you know, especially newer lifters to me would be like, okay, any last advice? And I'd be like, push hard or pull hard. Like, what do you want me to say? You know, like, the hay is in the barn. Do it. So shit like that, which is like a subtle reminder of, like, so you're winning this. Don't let them fucking do that. And, you know, like that's peak coaching in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's discouraging to the other guy though. Like,
which is even
it's
better.
A twofer.
For real though. Like, even better. They're hearing you too. I think that's something you got to be mindful of when you corner. Is everything you say they're hearing, for good or for better or for worse.
Right.
So you say something like, "You don't get armbarred. You're winning this," and then the guy misses the armbar.
You just broke him.
I found myself after fights when I cornered, like, thinking back to stuff I said, and I'm like, sometimes I find myself almost taunting the guy as a opponent with what 100% I'm saying.
Though.
And I'm like, I don't know if I should be doing that, but it is. I don't know. And no one's complained about it yet. I don't know. But like, I know it can hear me clearly, so I'll word things in a certain way that's so negative towards them, it's positive towards my guy.
I think better to ask for forgiveness and permission in that point.
Yes.
No one's saying anything.
Then I got mad
that
at
is
you,
a rule of fighting right there.
Yeah, cause I felt like a. Yeah, weren't you like swearing at him or something? You said you got in his face.
Yeah.
Something. And I was like chastising you for that, but I was like, wait a minute, I said something. I don't know.
Because
I wasn't super nice when I was coaching.
The guy
you,
I don't look at my opponent's social media very much because it's like, I mean, if I'm like trying to like find like videos of, you know, whatever, hitting pads or whatever.
Was he going off on you?
Well, apparently, it was either Reggie or Darian who did it, who was like looking at his stuff for me. And they were just like, I was like, man, like, this guy's talking shit, so he's going to knock you out. And I was like, I don't know, he can do his best.
From a low single.
And actually, now that I remember again, at weigh-ins, he, you know, we're taking pictures and everything, and we face each other, and I go to shake his hand, and, like, he holds on, and, like, he looks at me and goes, like, it's like, I just want you to know that tomorrow, like, I respect you, but tomorrow I'm going to go in there and try to destroy you, and I will come out victorious. Like,
so
we're
weird.
In, like, a Vikings
like
movie
you're in
or
a duel.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we're, like, in Doom or something, and we're about to face off. And all of that just completely went over my head because I was so, like, thirsty, and, like, I just want to go eat and drink now. And I was like, okay. And then I walked away because I didn't know what to say. It was like, you just monologued me, and I don't know how to.
Maybe he lost a bet, and his buddies made him do something like that.
I hope so, because it was very corny.
You just matched autism with autism.
Yeah,
okay.
But, yeah. You know that, you know that
good
meme?
Energy.
You know that meme where it's that... It's that African dude who was like, okay, like,
okay,
yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You're just, that's a great gift.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that one. But yeah, that's pretty much what my eyes said. Just, okay.
I think we nailed it, guys. Thanks. Yeah. We're going to let Santos drive home and think of all the other stuff he should have said about his fight.
Yeah, that's pretty much what's going to happen.
So thank you.
Oh, can I say real
quick? Oh, yeah, anything.
I just want to thank my sponsor Megan Michael for helping me out and you know, just giving me this awesome opportunity. I want to thank my coaches here and Brock, but he's not here. He's with us in spirit, and all my teammates at Striking Institute and Start BJJ. And that's, I think I covered everything.
When's this podcast dropping?
A couple weeks, probably. I don't know.
Oh, then I can't advertise a specific pie. But if you go to benthebaker.com, you can get pies anytime.
Eat his pies.
They're pretty dang good.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Pohata Podcast. And hey, if you're a regular listener, head on over to the Pohata Podcast on Instagram, where amongst the ridiculous memes, you'll find a link to the merch shop
and be able to keep up with the disorganized going-ons of the show.